Hello and welcome to the Regen Agri podcast, the go-to place to hear everything related to regenerative agriculture. Regen Agri is an initiative supporting farms, agribusinesses and the supply chain in their transition to regenerative approaches. We offer global capability with the aim of securing the health of the land and the wealth of those who live on it. For more information about our initiative and to find out how we can help you with your regenerative journey, please visit regenagri.org. I'm your host, Rose Ryanie, and once again, I'm excited to bring you the latest developments in the global phenomenon that is regenerative agriculture. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Charlie Angelakos, Vice President of Global External Affairs and Sustainability at McCain Foods, and Cannon Michael, President and CEO at Bowles Farming Company in California. McCain Foods is the largest manufacturer of frozen prepared products in the world, working with 3,500 farming partners, 51 facilities, and 22,000 employees. Bowles Farming Company has a 160-year working family history in which Cannon is a sixth-generation farmer implementing diverse regenerative cropping strategies and environmental stewardship. Charlie, Cannon and I will discuss how building diversity and resilience into supply chains, incorporating regenerative agricultural principles from the top down and bottom up, will future-proof food and textile production for the good of our planet and its people. Welcome to you both and thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. Thank you very much, Rose.
So to start, I'd like you both to introduce yourselves and just provide our listeners with some background to your roles and your interest in regenerative agriculture. So if we go to you first, Charlie.
My name is Charlie Angelakos, and I head up external affairs and sustainability at McCain Foods. McCain Foods is a multinational company based here in Canada. It is a family-owned company that was founded in 1957. We are the largest manufacturers of French fries in the world. As a matter of fact, one in four French fries is a McCain fry. We partner with 3,500 farmers around the world, and we have 23,000 employees worldwide. And a main focus of us heading into the future is onboarding our farmer partners around regenerative agriculture. And the role that regenerative agriculture can play in not just mitigating climate change, but at the same time, helping transition and build a more viable food system for the years to come.
Wonderful. And Cannon?
Yes. So my name's Cannon Michael. I am the president of my family's farming company, which is called Bowles Farming Company, and we're based here in Central California. The company has long history here in California. We were started by my third great-grandfather, immigrated from Germany in the 1850s. He had a slight background. He was a pretty young man, but had a background in the cattle business and ended up being kind of right place, right time when California was really growing and needing a stable food supply. He was supplying meat to a growing state and did so pretty successfully. Since that time, we've transitioned the business quite a bit from cattle to mostly pretty diverse vegetable crops. When I first got back to the farm, we were only growing three crops, which were barley, cotton, and alfalfa. 2013, started making some transitions to organic practices and certifications, as well as really diversifying our crop mix. Tomatoes are one of our biggest crops. We also grow extra long staple cotton, which is a unique cotton fiber in the world. We do winter crops, which are carrots, garlic, onions. We also do large melon program, watermelons, cantaloupes, honeydew melons. We do sweet corn, different herb crops, basil, cilantro, oregano, thyme, a whole host of other things. We grow wheat as a cover crop at times, but quite a bit of diversity. California has very rigorous standards for protection of workers and the environment. So have a lot of rigor around what we do on the farm mandated by the state. I'm also very involved in water issues here in California. I chair a large water authority. Different members represent over 2 million people, over a million and a half acres of agricultural lands, and then over 200,000 acres of wetland habitat. So a pretty diverse group of stakeholders dealing with a lot of challenging issues here in California related to water. And I think we're pretty sustainable after farming the same piece of land for over 160 years. So I think we figured a few things out. Certainly look to the future of how we can provide intelligent solutions here on the farm to help our partners and be part of larger solutions around the globe in terms of climate change and things like that. So anyway, happy to be here and appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you, Cannon. Before we get into how you have been tackling some of the unique challenges that you've got farming in California, I'd like to go back to you, Charlie, and just understand a bit about McCain's sustainability strategy and where regenerative agriculture fits into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So sustainability is at the heart of our purpose as a business. Celebrating real connections through delicious, planet-friendly food is what our core purpose is as a business. And then from there, it runs through our organizational values, which are family, authentic, trusted, and quality. So our goal is to help drive the transition to making our food and agricultural systems more sustainable and resilient. So within our strategy, there are four main pillars. The first one would be smart, sustainable farming. That is how we farm and how our partners farm. And that's where our regenerative agriculture commitment would fit. The second pillar would be around resource efficient operations, and that's really about CO2 reductions. The third pillar, obviously, we're a food company. It's about good food. It's how we make our food and the metrics associated with that. And finally, we built our business over the years in partnership with not just our farming community, but also the communities in which we do business. So the fourth pillar is around thriving communities and how we give back to the communities that have helped us build our business over the years.
Brilliant, thank you. And how have recent climate events influenced that sustainability strategy? Have you seen any specific changes or threats?
Absolutely. So if I was to take a step back, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, we had noticed climate events affecting our business. In the past, I would say that a climate event would happen once every 10 or 15 years. And as a business, we would just deal with it. But what we noticed is climate events are happening on a more frequent basis. It's not uncommon for us to have 2 or 3 climate events a year in different parts of the world, whether it's a drought, extreme heat, that are affecting the ability of our farmers to be able to farm. So what we did was we set out to do a climate study, which really looked at different climate patterns around the world. And we projected that forward to say, what would the world look like in 2050? And the results of that climate study were extremely startling and worrisome for us. So that really gave us the impetus to set our goal of 100% regenerative agriculture along our acreage by 2030, and really set the wheels in motion as to how we set our regenerative agriculture code, how we would train our farming partners to get to a much better place.
Okay, interesting. Thank you. And Cannon, how has Bowles Farm tackled climate and environmental challenges over its extensive working history?
Yeah, I think it kind of builds fundamentally on your first question that you asked to Charlie about strategy. I mean, I think if I look back over our history, you know, we really look at sort of having some pillars of things that we value and really care about. And I think that's, you know, kind of now is being encompassed underneath the umbrella of what's being talked about as regenerative. But I think it's been things that we've been doing for a long period of time. I mean, we essentially believe that if our local community is healthy, our workers are healthy, local environment's healthy, and our soil are healthy, that, you know, we can have a successful business. And I think that's the way we've looked at it for over a century. You know, we've had that opportunity to cultivate the same land and take care of generations of people that have worked for us. You know, we've got people with long histories here, and even their children and some grandchildren are now working for us. You know, so we have this long kind of longevity, but also a look to the future. But I don't think that changes our commitment to those pillars that I first mentioned that have to essentially be healthy at the same time. So we are constantly kind of evaluating how to make the investments that are make sure that those things happen. And so, you know, as we do look towards increasing pressures, you know, regulatory pressures here in California, and then of course, environmental pressures, you know, changing things, and not to debate maybe why the climate's changing, but certainly when you work in the natural systems, you know, we can't look away from the fact that we're seeing a lot more volatility, a lot hotter summers. There's been quite a bit of change that we have to deal with. So we really, you know, as part of our long view strategy, have made big investments in ways to steward resources. You know, water's one in California that can be scarce at times with our unique Mediterranean climate, where we don't get a whole lot of annual rain at the farm and don't rely on rain for irrigation. So 80% of the farm we've invested in drip irrigation technology to maximize, you know, every drop of water the most efficient way possible. And then, of course, because we're changing from where we used to furrow irrigate or flood irrigate fields to pressurizing that water through drip systems. You know, we've had to make big investments in solar energy to offset the electrical demand that's needed to pressurize that water. So we've got over 1.5 megawatts of solar just invested to offset our energy demands. You know, we continue to look to our soils to, you know, help us through difficult times, increasing soil organic matter. We have a compost investment that I can talk about a little later. But anyway, we're just looking at the ways to kind of do whatever we can on the ground. There's a lot of things out of our control, but there's a lot of our long-term philosophy, I think, is helping us deal with some of the challenges, but also just looking towards the future and implementing as much of the technology as we possibly can, kind of an all of the above effort to kind of lead things forward.
Charlie, from McCain's perspective, you have quite a unique setup that you have direct relationship with your farmers, whereas usually we see within food systems quite long supply chains. Could you tell me a bit more about how that came about and why it's something that's important to McCain?
I think it's fair to say that since 1957, we built our business in partnership with our farming community. And early on, our founders had a motto that said, if we don't get the agronomy right, nothing else matters. So for us, really, it's about listening to the farmer and helping them adapt to not just mitigate climate change, but also to build a strong and sustainable farming operation for the future. Because at the end of the day, for us, we would not have a business without that partnership with the farmer. So we set out to listen to a farming base. We developed the Regenerative Agriculture Code in consultation with our farming community, along with different NGOs, and pressure testing it with government just to ensure that we were on the right path. Because at the end of the day, PowerPoint execution is very different. And it was important for us to have those conversations to make sure what we were doing was practical and tangible, and that would work at the a farm level. And in concert with that, we really wanted to make sure that we were trialing these techniques on our own. So with that, we announced 3 farms of the future. We have 2 operational. One is in New Brunswick, where our company was founded, and the other one is in South Africa. And why geography is important is, you know, regenerative agriculture is not a one-size-fits-all solution. There are different techniques along the way in different growing regions around the world. So by having a farm in New Brunswick, that's a one-season growing farm. In South Africa, it's a 4-season growing farm. So we're able to trial these techniques to see what is working and what's not working, more importantly, so that we can transfer those best practices to farmers around the world. So as an example, techniques that we have in South Africa can easily be transported to Latin America for a grower there, and vice versa. So through these farms of the future, we have a best practice ecosystem where we can teach and trial techniques for our growers, and they can be successful based on the trials that we've done. But at the same time, we are failing at certain things so that they don't have to take the risk.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that idea of you're failing on their behalf so that they don't have to do that, because often the risk of changes is a big barrier for farmers getting into regenerative agriculture. I'm interested to know what other support you're giving your farmers through that regenerative agriculture transition. Are there any kind of financial arrangements or training or anything like that that's going on?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So training is very important to us. So we are doing training with our farmers all around the world. And we are partnering with different organizations. As an example, in North America, we partner with the Soil Health Institute on training, and there are different training programs around the world. There's not one size fits all for financing the transition. We know that. So we've done many different things around the world. So first, we've entered into different financial arrangements with banks in key markets where the bank will backstop loans. We will cover interest in some areas. And it's really about looking at what makes sense from a farmer and what financial need they might have around the world. So in France, as an example, we have arrangements with Crédit Agricole. In other parts of Europe, it is with Rabobank. Canada, it's with Farm Credit Canada. So that's one piece for us. The other piece that's worked quite effective with us in different parts of the world is through contracting. In Europe, as an example, we enter into long-term contracts with our farmers, where if they farm regeneratively, they will get not only a long-term contract, but a premium for the product that is farmed regeneratively. So all that to say, this is all new to us. But at the same time, we are identifying the right levers that we can pull that can help finance the transition for our growers to mitigate the cost to them so that the transition can be done as smoothly as possible with them.
It's really interesting. So you're considering the farmer as well as the farm. Cannon, how does Bowles see the human aspect of regenerative agriculture?
Yeah, well, first I'd applaud Charlie and McCain for taking that position to provide assistance like that. It's really helpful from a farmer's perspective to get support during these transitions. Yeah, for us, you know, again, I think I identified earlier, one of our core pillars is taking care of our people that work for us, as well as a local community, making sure that it's healthy there. So I certainly appreciate that regenerative ideas at this point are taking into consideration how the human beings are treated, because I think that's something for our farm that we have made big investments in and that we excel at. So certainly nice to be recognized for the efforts that we've made. We've made a lot of changes over the last, really since about 2016. We've got a very robust scholar program that we have every year for all the children and grandchildren of all of our workers. We also have a scholarship program for any of those children that are going to continue on into further education outside of high school. And we're making big investments in those folks and seeing amazing results of kids, some who have grown up on the farm. We do have some housing that we supply for some of the workers, and kids going on to be PhDs and executives in large companies. And so some pretty amazing stories. I think we've got a obligation to transform seeds and plants into healthy food for people, but we've also got the obligation to transform our people into productive and healthy members of society. It's a real honor to get to work with great people, and I don't think the world at large understands how important the human aspect of people who work in agriculture are. I think you get the food out on your plate, or maybe you see it in the grocery store, and you don't think of the hands that it took to get there and the hours of really hard work. And so we've also had a policy in that we've changed inside the company where we're having a lot more advancing employees from within the company. We've transitioned a number of hourly employees to salaried positions. That, of course, has to be coupled with leadership training and ongoing kind of commitment to support our leaders that are moving up, but certainly gives them more opportunities to contribute. And we're seeing, you know, excellent results.
Fantastic. A really commendable community-minded approach to it. I'd love to know a little bit more about the environmental benefits that you are both seeing through adopting regenerative agriculture, though, in terms of things like yield or, you know, effect on carbon, water, soil health, etc.
You know, for us, we're seeing the benefits firsthand as they are demonstrated at our farms of the future. And it's important to invest in best practices around the world that suit different regions and climates, as I said. So it's a four times growing season in South Africa versus one in New Brunswick. From a yield perspective, while it's early days and additional economic and environmental benefits are still being captured, so we are in year three of our full four-year rotation, so far regenerative practices have definitely not had a negative impact on yield. And if anything, yields have been flat with an increase in some years as well. From a cost savings perspective, we've recognized cost savings from reduced synthetic fertilizer use and lower costs in fuel and labor due to reduced tillage that we do on the farm. From a carbon perspective, it's interesting. Year three of the New Brunswick farm has achieved 17% reduction in fertilizer use and a 30% reduction in carbon compared to other farms in the area. So we are seeing that the practices that we are doing are definitely having a great benefit from a water perspective. In 2023, our overall water use efficiency improved by 9.4% in water-stressed region, and we've had a 16.3% improvement in water use efficiency around the world as well.
Thank you. And Cameron, how is that panning out for you? And in particular, how does your diverse set of crops play into creating environmental benefits for you?
I think it's really important. I think Charlie's alluded to it a couple of times. I think context really matters when we're having some of these discussions. So I can talk about California farmers, but even within that, the subset of farmers, you know, I'm sure Charlie, as he's met different farmers, has seen, you know, we're all very different individuals and we run our businesses very differently. Our philosophies are very different. Our bandwidth and capabilities are different. Our scale, all those things. And I think my baseline to where I would make adjustments to make big reductions, I mean, it's much harder for me in some ways because we've been on a really aggressive pathway of monitoring what we're doing, cutting back as much as we can in many different areas. And so, you know, I think it's important to realize that you've got quite a bit of difference from area to area, both just from a climate perspective, and then you've got quite a bit just from a philosophy perspective and from a regulatory perspective. And so it's important to remember that as we, you know, look at when people are saying how many cuts and percentages and things like that. I think, you know, you've got to have some context around, you know, what are the practices and what is the baseline that we're talking about. And when I look at our farm and our family, I mean, I think we've been doing regenerative, you know, quote unquote, before it essentially became a cool thing to talk about. You know, we've had animal integration, we've had soil health programs, we've had biodiversity programs, we've had, you know, all these different parts of regenerative that are components. You know, we've had them maybe not in such a programmatic and defined way, but they've all been incorporated, cover crops and all these different things where they've made sense. We've implemented them. But, you know, again, now looking at it as, you know, if it's going to be underneath sort of a more programmatic look, you know, how do we kind of make sure we incorporate all those things? We've worked with some groups where they wanted us to do wildly different practices. You know, there's a few cotton groups that have come in and asked us to do things. They've mitigated some of our risk, which is why we made the choice to do it. You know, I think it's also important to remember that farmers are operating on a continuum of where we're constantly iterating and changing practices over time. So, you know, maybe it's not the lens that people look through of how quickly you can make change, but because we're exposed to so much other risk in terms of price and climate and all these variables that we can't control, we've got to be very careful when we introduce new practices. But, you know, going back to your global question, I mean, we've had very good success with our philosophy over how we treat our soil and our environment and our people. And so I think our yields, when we compare them to county averages and state averages, are often quite a bit better. I know from water use, looking at what we're doing, we're at the very low end of what it takes to grow the crops that we're growing. I mean, so we have anecdotal and some, you know, more defined evidence of success and certainly seeing organic matter gains. But again, the place context is super important. We, as a Mediterranean, one of the few Mediterranean climates in the world, we just cannot have the same regenerative program that's going to be for large rain-fed monoculture areas because it's just so different and our soils are different. The temperatures are different. Irrigation applications are different. So I think it's also really important, again, going back to my comment about context, I think we just need to also be careful that we don't try to, it's easier and we all want to generalize and kind of make things simple. But I think in this context, we need to be careful about generalizing too much and make sure that we are looking at the growers themselves.
Absolutely, Cannon. And that's what is going to really make this successful at the end of the day. We don't know what we don't know. You're the one who knows how to operate your farm, and our farmers know how to operate their farms. They've been doing this for years, and it's very important that we all of us, regardless of what company is on the regenerative journey, listen to our farmers to ensure that the solutions are on farm and farmer-centric, because at the end of the day, without that buy-in together, we will all fail, and that won't be a great outcome. Because of the need for regenerative agriculture as it relates to climate change and also building a resilient food supply system for the future.
Yeah, Charlie, I think I mentioned it earlier, but I really appreciate it. It sounds like McCain has got a really great approach. And so I didn't know much about your company before, but I certainly hope I'll be, if I can't avoid, I'll be eating some French fries that are McCain's. So I appreciate it.
That's great. Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I really like that idea of farmer-centric solutions and balancing that risk level with various other risks that you're seeing. And going back to something else that Charlie said earlier, you said there's a sort of philosophy behind McCain that if we don't get the agronomy right, nothing else matters. So I'm interested to know, how are you actually kind of measuring and monitoring that you are getting the agronomy right? And how are you kind of validating that you are moving towards this goal of 100% regenerative potatoes by 2030?
Yeah, for us, it starts with our framework that was developed in clear collaboration with our farming partners, and it also outlines the core regenerative principles and the outcomes for farmers and the food system. So that's point one. It also contains what I would call high-level pathways for our farmers to make incremental progress towards farming regeneratively. And we're really proud of the code. 51% of our farmers sort of globally are now at the onboarding stage of our code. So we're extremely proud of, you know, the gains we've made in a very short period of time. On top of that, we do have a Farm of the Future external advisory board where we continue to connect with not just thought leaders, but farmers and growers around the world to ensure that we are not going too far off track along the way. And then because of our direct relationship with the farmer, we have ongoing conversations with them about different tools that we have at our disposal to help us assist in their transition, but also that would validate key metrics to ensure that we are holding up to our end of the bargain. What we're doing is actually effective and working at the farm level.
And Canon, as you rightly said, you know, regenerative agriculture is very much context-based. So how are you at Bowles validating your regenerative approach?
Yeah, so we've made big investments. I mean, to us, our reputation and our integrity is something that we hold. Just, you know, you can't ever take the chance to tarnish those things. And we value that we've been seen as really credible partners in California agriculture and beyond. And so anything we do, we want to make sure we have validation. You know, we start off, I mean, first of all, if we're going to make any significant changes, we have a long, long history of soil sample data across the farm. With regenerative, we've been actually not taking the soil samples ourselves. We've been having third parties come on so that we have a kind of chain of custody and make sure that, you know, there's starting with baseline that we go up from there and have, you know, continual ability to come back to the same spots that we soil sample. And so, you know, integrity of data is critical to us. You know, the ecological surveys that we do, birds and other species on the farm to see if we're making improvements. You know, those are all done by NGO groups in California with those specialties of whatever the organism is that we're going to be looking at. You know, certifications can be really positive, but they're just kind of only one aspect. I think we have to make sure that we're backing up anything that we do with really credible data. I think it's also really important to be careful of making claims after a short period of time, because essentially, I know people are really wanting to say that big improvements are being made quickly, and I certainly appreciate that. I just would say in the natural system, you know, changing your soil dramatically and seeing how long that is going to take. And also if it's in the top couple of feet, or if it's, you know, maybe you could be depleting something below or vice versa. It takes a lot longer to make claims in agriculture that are credible and that can last the, you know, stand the test of time. I think we've seen some groups say, oh, well, just because our farmers plant cover crops, you know, they should be getting, you know, more money because they're likely, you know, sequestering more carbon. I just don't know that you want to just hang your hat on those. At least we don't want to hang our hat on those kind of things. We want to make sure that we're backing it up with year over year data that can prove it. And so that's why we're working with a lot of universities that come onto the farm and conduct trials. We have our own protocols for how we handle things, but integrity of data is critical and not making statements. You certainly don't want regenerative to fall on its face because of purported greenwashing or, you know, people not trusting it. So definitely want it to get off the ground with a strong foundation.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point about requiring kind of robust long-term data to show continuous improvement over time. And it does complicate how you can communicate that with the public. McCain is obviously a very public-facing brand. So how are you addressing that challenge, Charlie?
You know, for McCain, sustainability is not just about checking a box on a corporate report. It's about showing leadership in our industry and the communities around the globe. So we do have an obligation to educate our consumers about regenerative agriculture. There was a report that was commissioned in the UK by Demos that showed less than 3 in 10 people were familiar with the term regenerative agriculture. So what we've done is set out on a consumer awareness journey. Last year, we had a specific SKU around regen fries. We also launched a game through Roadblocks, Livetopia, which allowed a consumer to go and play a video game on the life of regenerative fry. But beyond that, we have an obligation to go to places where our consumers are to raise awareness on the benefit of regenerative agriculture so that we can paint the picture of what regenerative agriculture means, raise awareness so that more and more consumers will buy the product. And at the end of the day, that will not just benefit us as a company, I think it'll benefit, you know, the world writ large around regenerative agriculture. And more importantly, benefit our farmer.
Fantastic, thank you. And to finish up, I'd be interested to know what piece of advice you would give to businesses equivalent to each of yours who are aiming to become more regenerative.
I would say join us on the journey. For us, this isn't about a competitive advantage. It's really about transforming the food system to help us get to a much better place. At the end of the day, we are not scaling fast enough globally in regenerative agriculture. The growth rate must triple to reach 40% of global cropland to deliver against the planet's need to limit climate change to 1.5 degrees. So what I would say is, join us on our journey. This is not about competitiveness. This is really about us getting together to evolve the food system in partnership with our farmers so that we can not only mitigate climate change, but build a sustainable food system for the years to come.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Cannon, from the farming perspective.
Yeah, I think advice, I mean, again, each farm is so different and everybody's bandwidth is really different. So I have a hard time, I guess, giving advice to California farmers because I know they're already doing a lot more than is required in other places. I just wanted to share just one observation. And I think, you know, the conversation about how McCain's approaching it is great and what their investments are. I will say that's one crop. And I think that's kind of the challenge that I'm facing here on our farm is that we really on the regenerative side right now, in terms of people wanting to maybe pay a premium or be supportive, we're really finding that only in one crop. And that for us is cotton. I've got 15 other crops where people are not asking me really at this point or not really all that concerned. And, you know, these are a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables and things that I talked about earlier. At this point, they're not seeing, you know, a consumer that is wanting to pay anything extra and, you know, help. And they themselves, these companies aren't maybe at the point where they're willing to pay a premium for anything related to regenerative. So it creates challenges for a farmer because essentially I'm trying to make investments and practice changes and pay for sampling and do all these other things with really only one crop. And I can't grow that crop year after year after year just based on soil health and reasonable farming practices. So certainly need more companies to join and hopefully take the approach of McCain and others to support because, you know, farmers need rotation opportunities. And if we only have a couple of crops that people are caring about, it's going to make it very difficult for us to make long-term transitions and the investments that we need to make the practice changes. So we need larger conversations and we definitely need more support so people can make some more transitions and get there faster.
Thank you. And how can people stay up to date with each of you?
From a McCain perspective, you can get us on the website at McCain.com. But I would also encourage anybody who's interested to listen to our podcast, the Hot Potato Podcast, where you can find that on all major streaming platforms. We're also on LinkedIn and all the major platforms.
Wonderful. And Cannon?
Yeah, I think we don't have a podcast ourselves, but we participate in quite a few of them. Our website is www.bfarm.com, so we can keep up with us there. And as Charlie said, we're also on all the major social platforms. Happy to always entertain questions of people and want to be a resource for people interested in agriculture.
Wonderful. Well, Charlie, Cannon, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you both today. So thank you for joining me on the Region Agri Podcast.
Yes, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rose. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me today for the Region Agri Podcast. To learn more about McCain Foods and the Bowles Farming Company, please find the relevant links in the show notes. If you would like to know more about how Region Agri can help you on your regenerative journey, from advisory services and monitoring of on-farm data to regenerative certification and carbon verification, please visit regionagri.org. You can also check out our case studies and articles and gain access to our digital hub for free insight and advice via the Region Agri website. Alternatively, follow us on X, previously known as Twitter, or on Instagram at regionagri_org, or search for Region Agri on LinkedIn.